Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Hello and welcome to another Punk Rock Bowling Turned Out a Punk special episode. And today on the show, returning to the show, one of the greatest front people ever. One of my favorite episodes, actually, the first time he was here. Roger Murray from Agnostic Front is back on the show. More info on that in 1 second. First, if you want to get in touch with me, hit up the email address, turnoutapunkpodcast@gmail.com. That is run by Tristan Abraham, my brother, guest booker, and show producer extraordinaire. And he will get the message to me. He also runs a Facebook page, a YouTube page, a TikTok page, an Instagram page, all for Turn Out a Punk. Those can be found at Turn Out a Punk on those platforms. I'm on Twitter or Instagram at Left4Damien. To support the show, tell all your friends about it. I play in a band. We are called Fucked Up. You can find out more information at fuckedup.cc. We got shows and tours and all sorts of stuff coming up. And that is it. All right, on to today's show. As I said off the top, Roger Murray is back. We were also supposed to be joined by Vinny, but Vinny did not make the podcast. Roger talks a little bit about that off the top. But what happened was I had all this stuff kind of prepared to talk to Vinny about and Vinny and Roger together about. And because we had to pivot, we wind up just having a really great conversation. Roger is someone who has had an immense influence on myself and the music I make through the music he's made in Agnostic Front. But he's someone who barring that first conversation and running into him a few times on the road, I've never really had a chance to sit down and talk with. And there's a lot of things I've wanted to talk to him about for a very long time. And you hear a lot of that in this conversation. So I'm excited for you to hear it. This is a great one. Agnostic Front will be down at Punk Rock Bowling in Las Vegas. Roger talks about a special exhibit thing he has popping up down there with some ephemera. Punk Rock Bowling is kind of becoming like WrestleMania weekend, where there's just like the Punk Rock Bowling event, all those after shows, and then just people showing up and doing all sorts of cool little pop-up things as well. So I'm very excited. I can't wait to get down there. 2024 also marks the 40th anniversary of, I guess not 40th anniversary, 40th year, 40th birthday, 40th anniversary year, start of the 40th anniversary. Anyway, Victim in Pain came out in 1984, and now it's 2024, and it's still one of the greatest albums ever made. Roger talks about it in the show, but there is a 40th anniversary reissue of this monster, which is coming out, and it's going to have all sorts of bonus stuff in it. You can get more information at Generation Records about that. There's going to be some variants, and there's going to be some down there at Punk Rock Bowling too. So get ready. There's a tape as well, which also has United Blood on it. And which I guess United Blood 83. So this would be the 40th anniversary of United Blood this year. Anyway, I'm confusing myself with this math. Get these records. And that is it. So sit back, relax, and enjoy Roger Murray on Turned Out a Punk. Roger, welcome back to the show.
You're welcome. Good to be back. I love this shirt. Poison Idea, Pick Your King.
Yeah, rest in peace, Pig.
Yeah.
Which actually, you know, we were supposed to be joined by Vinny, which may or may not happen, but I did want to talk to you, and Poison Idea is kind of another example of this, but I was thinking about it. You and Vinny are kind of like the Mick and Keith of hardcore in a lot of
Oh.
ways, you know?
Yeah, I get it, man.
But I think that's almost like a New York tradition, and maybe it originally came out of sort of Stones worship. But you look back at Thunders and Johansson, or even the Dead Boys. I know they're transplants, but like the Dead Boys, there's a sort of this like, and the Ramones as well, like where there's like this idea that I don't want to say like co-front people, but almost like at times competing front people in bands where
Yeah.
it doesn't become like it works in this way because it's like it doesn't like it's not like Jello Biafra or Flag with any of their singers where it's like the show with these guys playing behind them. There's almost like this like kind of constant interplay between the two of you guys up front.
Yeah. I mean, we've been friends forever. I mean, going on, been a band for 42 years. Our friendship has been that long, we just we're different, very different from each other. Vinny will talk to a fire hydrant. He doesn't need to have anybody. He could talk to a conversation with a fire hydrant, and he'll just talk to anybody. He's that guy. I've always been a little bit more reserved, more humble, more a lot of people don't really like to approach me. I don't know why. I'm a nice guy, but I just carry myself differently. I've always been very a lot. I've been an introvert my whole life, So this band stuff, which is great, I want to say, what I want to say, was always a little weird and strange for me, putting myself out there. But I'm okay with it. And Vinny picks up the slack where I need where I need to go bury my head in this in the ground or something, So he is it's definitely like I always say more like the Odd Couple, that remember that show?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's more like that, But we definitely when we come together, it's always great. It's like nothing ever stopped in between. But when I need my space, and it's fine. We text each other here and there, and we talk. We communicate through Mike or Gallo, whatever. He knows I need my space, and but he knows when we come together, we're fine. We catch up. Ah, we go. I got to go back to my family, my kids. My crazy, my S subtle craziness where he goes to his full-on craziness. He's going wrestling. He's the outlaw Vinny Stigma. I mean, this guy, the other day I was watching something on YouTube and he's on a train. He's dressed like a clown. How did this guy do this stuff? And where does it come from? Why do I have to find these things on the internet? Like he's out of his mind,
It's almost like you need that kind of two types of personality for a band to survive long term, where you need someone who's got their heads in the clouds the whole time and someone who's got their feet on the ground the whole time.
Absolutely. I always like to say he's like our living Eddie from like Iron Maiden, have Eddie the character. But Stigma's alive. He's the character that's alive. So we've always had this joke when he drops dead, we're gonna stuff him and put him on a stage going like this on some train rails, with his guitar going back and forth, Because he is our mascot, a living mascot, But yeah, he is what he is, and he loves life, he enjoys life, and he really does. I've never met anybody in my life that has really lived a life. Like he has lived a life, an interesting life, the most interesting man in the world, if you know what I mean. That's the name of his book. It's coming out September.
I know.
He lived an interesting life and to its fullest,
Well, I was going to say, like, your book is an all-time classic must-read thing, but the only book after yours that I would want to read would be a Vinny book, because.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, and I love it. I love the description of it because it's very, very Vinny. It's got crossword puzzles. It's got recipes. It's got a comic strip. It's all over the place,
Yeah.
Because I don't think you can sit this guy down and have a normal conversation within 2 minutes. That was a lot of problems we were getting during interviews. Like people, I'm like, you got to help me with interviews, and we send some interviews to him. They call back, no, we have to do it with Roger. Like, what happened? Well, he wanted to talk about the Steelers, and that's not what the interview is about. He'll talk about what he wants to. He'll just change the subject, and you're talking about what he wants to, and that's just him. He's all over the place. You can't sit him down and get a. You can never get a full story from him. There's also little parts you have to. 2 or 3 days later, the rest of the parts come in. It's just he's just he's a character.
Because in that documentary, you talk about, I believe it's just self-diagnosed, but ADHD. and that you kind of deal with. And
Yeah, I
then
do whatever.
you see Vinny in a lot of those scenes where he's having these sort of free form conversations as someone who does also have ADHD. You recognize that, like, you maybe that's why you guys get along, is because you recognize the maybe the personalities work well. I know different sort of
Yeah.
levels of.
We definitely get along. We do not get along. You know, we get along. We've been through a lot, and he's always been there for me. I've always been there for him, you know? So we get along. We're lifelong friends, lifelong brothers. You know, he has nobody, he doesn't have a brother or a sister. He doesn't even have parents. I mean, he's got his son, you know, but my family has always adopted him. Like, his family is my family. My brother, my sister, and my other brother, Freddie, and my mom. I mean, Vinny comes over and he's eating, he's hanging out. This is his family, his extended family. So it's like, you know, it's that's the way it's been, you know. We you know, it's been great.
It's interesting you bring up the family thing, because like that's something that also comes up all the time when people talk about you guys on the show. I'm going to paraphrase here, but there's this thing that's been told to me where like there's certain bands in New York that if you gave them a loaf of bread, you'd see the loaf of bread and then five dead bodies on the ground with a knife as they killed each other trying to fight over the loaf of bread. But if you gave it to Agnostic Front, it would all be shared equally, and everyone would make sure that everyone was fed.
Yeah, that's what we've always been. We've always been well, yeah, us, especially us. And I lived that way in New York City amongst a lot of my friends. We live very much like a tribe style lifestyle. I talk about it in my book, you know, and I've always believed in that. You know what? Because I had nothing. I didn't have I mean, I had my mom and brothers, of course, but I didn't have that bond that I needed until I discovered New York hardcore, and it became like my family. And it was something special to me that I've never had. I never had a group of people that I could relate to and like feeling like I'm feeling, you know, as rebellious as I was rebellious. And it became something really special to me. And I've always kind of, you know, it's my passion. I've always worshipped that, and I've always been like, this is real. This is genuine. So I'm really committed to that, because you know, it's something I loved, and it really saved my life. And I think a lot of people should you know, and when they see us, that's another thing. Like, people, well, our secret to our longevity, I've always said this too, is the fact that, you know, people come up to us and meet us, they can see that we're real, we're genuine. And if you're not, people are going to figure that out quick. And nobody wants to be a part of something that's bullshit or some part that's not real. You know, do you want to be a part of something that's not real?
No.
No. So it's pretty simple. And we've always been real. We didn't never faked anything. We never claimed to be the best. We never claim to be anything that we're not, you know. We've just always been genuine, real, and titles have been handed down to us. We didn't claim them. We never made any claims, you know. It's just this is how people think of us.
Taking out, labels and isms from it, it is kind of like a very sort of socialist existence that's happening within the band. Like this sort of idea of equality and family structure and trying to create the world you want to live in, for yourself.
It is. We're very tight knit. We're tight knit. You know, we handle all our own stuff, our own, you know, we're kind of a single running machine. You know, we have a friend that helps us here and there. The one time, whenever that we expanded, only because of management, we've realized that was not really us. It's not our thing, you know. And we just went back to handling our business, because you know what? The truth is, if you want anything done right, you got to sometimes do it yourself. And that's where Vinny has left me alone, because he knows that if it's going to get done, if it's going to get done right, you know, I'm going to make sure. Because I really, everything I am a part of, I want, you know, I always see that it's done right, truthfully, and correct in everything I've ever been a part of, you know, because I don't want to be a part of anything that's bullshit.
From the sounds of it, like going back to when John or James were singing for Agnostic Front, like it felt like they were already a scene band from what everyone kind of describes. And I think you even describe it.
Yeah.
But like you join the band and it's almost like you're like, okay, well, let's now it's real. Like it goes from being a scene band to well, a band that changes everything, but like a real band once you kind of.
Yeah, and Vinny's always spoken about that. I think, you know, when nobody, you know, And even myself, when I even when I joined the band, I never thought I didn't even I did I was so clueless. I didn't know New York was past New York City. I never knew that they went all the way into Buffalo and Albany. Like, that's how narrow minded I'm. Plus, I'm a kid, and I didn't know. You know, like, I'm an immigrant. Like, English isn't my first language, and I never went past, you know, never, eighth grade is my last grade complete, you know. But either way, like, when I joined the band, for some reason, you know, I stepped in, I joined a band, everything's great. And then as some members started to fiddle and started getting different members, I felt like now I could do what I really wanted to do. And I got everything pretty seriously. And I, you know, getting this tour together, started doing things. I wanted to take it to a different level. And that's pretty much how it went. You know, in the beginning, it was definitely a New York thing, and it always remained a New York thing. You know, we were always welcome back from all our tours. People were really proud of us that we went out there and we waved the New York hardcore flag. We brought New York hardcore to all over the places. Then started doing all over. New York is probably one of the only and biggest scenes that is that bridge scene with all of the world. Like, there's so many people that could really connect to New York hardcore, Brazil, Portuguese, Spain, France, Australia, Japan. There's like something about it, and we kind of were on the forefront of that, you know, of getting people together. I think people just really gravitated to our band and loved it, and especially after that Live at CBGB's record came out. The other day I was thinking about that. Live at CBGB's, for a live record, it's probably the biggest live record in our genre of music, of punk and hardcore. I can't think of anything bigger when it comes to especially exposure or anything like that. That's like a classic record that everybody talks about and everybody owns. You know,
Yeah.
it's like Peter Frampton Alive or something of hardcore, you
Yeah, like
know?
Kick Out the Jams. It would be like, I'd say
Yeah.
Kick Out the Jams for like proto punk. But like, you're right, there's not really like a capital P punk record, first wave, that's like a live record. That there's a lot of great ones, but yeah, like the Live at CBGB's is iconic. And you're right, it does go global, like hardcore worldwide. And New York hardcore, because of like the flag that you guys are waving. And then it's carried on after you guys as well, and
Yeah.
to this day.
And that's another thing. I don't mean to interrupt you, is
No,
like
please.
we never claim to be the only flag wavers of the New York Hurl flag. We're always been proud of other bands, the younger bands coming up and waving the flag. It's, you know, we never like felt like, because I've always said you're gonna meet the same people on the way up as you are on the way down. So we've always been polite and generous, and we love all the bands. We've always invited them to come with us and do stuff with it, because we know at some point someone's gonna get bigger than us. We don't care. We just, you're waving that flag, New York hardcore flag. You know, it's like I say, like, maybe today is not my party, because, you know, my party was 1980, 81, 82, 83, 84. That was my party, and I really enjoyed it, and it was my youth, and it was my craziness. But we've always been today and currently, we're always invited to everyone else's party, because that's how much we mean to them. Like, we are like, you know, like the bands that, you know, influence them so much, and in a good way. Always been invited, you know, and extended that hand back to us. Not many bands do that. There's a lot of bands that, you know, they either they stop playing, or they're too good to hang out, or too good to be anybody else, or you know, it's just weird. We've always been that band that's, you know, the band.
Yeah, because I even with, you know, I wasn't there, and so I'm looking at it from obviously a distance. But even with Cause for Alarm, like as critiqued as it is for being like a quote unquote metal record, it never felt like you guys were trying to go metal. Like it never, like it felt like you were just that sonic was being brought in, but it was never like some of those LA bands or even some of the Boston bands where like they were like, okay, now we're taking a hard shift and we're no longer about what we were about.
Yeah, we never claimed to have made a change. I know a lot of bands have been like, okay, we grew up. That's, you know, this is who we are now. We never did that. I think what was going on back then is subconsciously, a lot of the bands, the metal and the punk bands, were like, you know, coming together, and they were like there was so much more similarities than there was differences. And I've always said that too. The only difference between metal back in 1985, 86, 87, and hardcore was the hair. Everybody dressed kind of the same, black pants, boots, tight shirts, and everybody had that attitude. Everybody was against the system. Everybody wanted to be heard, whatever they were, you know, they do. They were just outcasts, misfits. The only difference is some people had long hair, some people had mohawk, some people had no hair or spiked hair. That's the only difference. And we all loved aggressive, music, and we love that music with aggressiveness, whether it was the guitars, the vocals, the drums, and it came together. And I think Cause for Alarm was just that, us meshing. Same thing you saw, like with Carnivore started doing more hardcore, you know? And we were both influencing each other. We started doing a little bit more of the metal stuff, you know, like Rob and Alex were feeling that direction a little bit more. And it kind of worked, you know. I preferred those songs when we did them live, always have. I think those songs sound way better live. We've never been a recording band. You know, the studio's really never for us. We're more of a live band. That's why that live at CBGB's is so classic, because people see her that and they see us and they like relate, like, wow, this is like the real thing. It's not like, you know, we're all of a sudden this intricate sounding band and you see us live and it's a different band or something like that. You know, it's just, you know, I don't know.
You say that, but you put out probably, for my money, one of, if not the greatest hardcore LP of all time. And I think that's why a lot of people, like when I was getting into it and, you know, learning from the older heads, as one does, it was always presented to me like, you know, Victim in Pain, never Cause for Alarm. And so I didn't have the baggage with it that some of these people had. So I loved them both from the get go. And I think obviously the world's caught up and like a lot of people love all your records now. But I think maybe there was like, maybe because there is such a hard, not a hard turn, but there is a sonic shift from this iconic first LP, beloved first LP, to that second LP.
I call it growth, you know,
Yeah.
a maturity growth. We went from never leaving New York or tri-state area, Connecticut, Philly, stuff like that, Jersey, to we finally going out and meeting all these bands, playing with all these bands. It was just growth. Meeting Metallica, meeting Exodus, meeting you know, all those bands back then, and then meeting us. And then it was like, I remember giving us a talking to Metallica, and they were at our backstage room, and they're like, oh, and they're like, oh yeah, what's gonna be your next record? I handed them a sticker. Oh, it's called Liberty and Justice for dot dot dot. And they're like, yeah, we got a record coming out. It's gonna be out in 6 months. And all of a sudden, there it comes out. It's called And Justice for All. I mean, man, did we have anything to do with that influence? I mean, I remember handing them the stickers and talking to them, you know. And it was just like, it was cool just meeting other bands and just subconsciously, and you know, kind of influencing each other. You know what I mean? There's never anything done like deliberately. You know, and that's really what happened. That's really what happened.
Yeah, like now that I play in a band and have played in a band for a very long time, I have so much more empathy for the growth that happens within a band, because when you're on the outside, you don't, it's just so different than once you're like involved in this process and you're writing these songs and you're touring this music, and it's a natural thing. And I think there are obviously those bands that do take that like, oh, I hate that stuff now kind of turns, but otherwise it's just something that's going to organically kind of happen.
Yeah, I just think it's growth in a band and different members and how you're feeling, what you're doing, or what's missing. You know, we always liked, I've always said we've always been on the forefront of all the different variations or what we call old school, new school, and all that hardcore and crossover and thrash and all that stuff. And then we've always recycled ourselves. You know, we've always been leaders, not followers. So we're kind of recycling ourselves, you know. Like, and we're writing songs, but in the same vein as this, or in the same vein as that, or, and it's not done deliberately. It's just us being us, and you know, and that's how the songwriting goes. We'll write a song if it feels good. If it feels good to us, feels genuine, feels honest, and I feel that, I feel like I could deliver that to our friends and family. I never like to say fans, you know, and then they. You know, they observe it, and it's not for everybody. I never say, hey, you got to like my band. If you don't like my band, go screw yourself. I play for those that want to be there and are there to see us, and I always want to make sure everybody has a good time. That's all I'm me and Vinny, the same thing. You know, like if you don't like us or don't, and just don't come. That's it's as simple as that. Why would I want to go see a band I don't like? I don't get it. You know, like I'll just stay home. And I think, and that goes for a lot for like songwriting too. Like there's always so many critiques and stuff like that. Maybe it was not made for you. Maybe it's not your cup of tea. It doesn't mean it's someone else's cup of tea. Well, maybe I'm feeling chai today. Maybe I'm feeling mint. It doesn't matter. It's still a cup of tea, whether you like it or not. You know what I mean? And I'm not going to shove it down nobody's throat. You don't like it? Cool. Some new kid liked it now. Now I have 10 new kids, and maybe I lost one or two, but they eventually all gravitate and come back because they know the way we are. We're more of a live band. We're not that recording band. You come to our show, everything comes together, and like, wow, these songs are, oh, wow, these, what are these songs? And then they go back and they revisit, you know?
Well, because I guess to get more and more populist, you have to sand off more and more of the edges or lean in more and more to one way and just kind of make compromises to appeal.
I don't think we lean into any way. I think we just do, you know, and like I said, we tour a lot and we're always touring and meeting new bands and stuff. And I subconsciously still to this day, stuff mixes. Like not every, I can't say, hey, we've influenced every band. We've done it all. If it wasn't for us, there wouldn't be this. That's rude. There are young bands still influencing us, you know? And when I watch them play, I'm like, and subconsciously I got something in my head that, wow, it was great. And it stuck in my head. And when I'm writing something, it may have channeled through. And I'm not going to say, well, hey, we're the best. And that's that. You guys are second rate, third rate. You're the L team, the B. That's so freaking rude, man. It's like we're still to this day being influenced by all these younger bands. And you know what? And they're schooling us here and there, you know? Like, hey, you know, like I said, we're never gonna hold that torch all the time, but we're glad to pass it over and glad to hear these bands. Like, wow, these bands are great. This is what I want to hear. I don't want to hear crap in the radio, you know, like this is what I like. And that's, I think that means a lot. I mean, Vinny's the same way, man. We go on tour, we have the greatest of times, especially all the new bands. They want to hear all the crazy stories, you know, and then, you know, it's just fun. It's just fun. It's just a good time.
Yeah, like it becomes hardcore worldwide, right? And that's when it becomes, to me, really interesting. And that's when it becomes organic. Like it's not, and like you're saying, that's why
I think
it's.
organic is a great word for that, for what we're all trying to describe here. It's kind of a weird word, organic. You'd think food or whatever, but it's just a natural organic, like it's feels comfort. It's just doing what feels right for you, and having that confidence to believe that what you're doing could be transferred to other people and they could relate to it.
Yeah, and it's, I think that's like the difference between like you guys and some of the other bands of maybe your era and other eras and too in punk, where there's a lot of ownership and this is punk and this stuff isn't punk and this is hardcore and this stuff isn't hardcore. And I feel like that's when you lose it and that's when you miss the point, because it's only interesting when it's all of it, and it is this thing that's real, like real music. Like, this is the difference between this and so much other shit, because this is reality music, and
Yeah.
it's, and because of that, people's realities are going to be different, and it's not going to be able to always be this one person's version of this thing.
No, it shouldn't be that. And that, you know, like when punk got into me, because I like to say that, I never could say when I got into punk, because it got into me and it became like a virus, you know, and I freaking loved it. All kinds of band, you know. Punk was politically incorrect, and that was correct back then, you know? And just the differences between bands and the sound, like back then, if you kind of could hear where a band was from, and everybody sounded different. Listen to Dead Kennedys, listen to Black Flag, listen to Circle Jerks, listen to SSD Control, listen to Negative Approach, listen to Minor Threat, listen to Agnostic Front, and even in New York, listen to Cross for Alarm, listen to Antidote, listen to The Abused, listen to Urban Waste. It was just this beautiful mixture of like creativity and insanely incredible. And there back then there was some of that, like a little slightly competition of better players, whatever. We were never known as the best players, trust me. You know, but what really blew a lot of people's mind in New York City was a lot of their, especially a lot of the earlier bands or stuff, is that, and even before I joined the band, Agnostic Front was always a band that was for the people. It was the people's band, and that never changed. From the minute John Watson was there singing, Diego on bass, Robbie Krieg-Crash on drums, Vinny on guitar, that never changed. It was the people's band. And it was always the people's choice, you know, of like it's, if you have to vote for the people's choice, it was agnostic. Fine. Well, no, not the greatest players, not the best vocals. Definitely, you know, not anything like, but it was just the people's choice. And then we've always been that people's choice. And we've been grateful for it. And we've been always grateful that people have been influenced by us and stuff like that. And we'd like to, you know, we, and it's after 42 years, that's all we got. You know, that's, you know, I've been in places all over the world. I was on my honeymoon. I was in Greece and dressed in honeymoon clothing. You know, I'm with my wife in my honeymoon. I'm in this white, whatever. I don't know what that cotton stuff is, but you know, I'm in my honeymoon and people coming up to me and like crying, saying, if it wasn't for you, I don't know what it would have done in my life. I've been to Russia. And it was, for the first time I went to Russia, it was a guy in St. Petersburg came to me with his record, Cost Salami. He goes, I went to jail for having this record. I did 2 years in prison because I owned this record. Could you believe that?
That's wild. Yeah. It makes you realize like, yeah, it's just like,
and he still has that same record. He didn't care. He did the time, you know, and I signed it for him. Like you meet these incredible people that have gone through this crazy hardship and they'll say it, if it wasn't for you guys, I would have never got through this. So I think that's been our mission in life, with some kind of counseling worldwide, subconsciously again, just by us telling our stories and people knowing that we speak of oppression and overcoming oppression, you know, and I think people could relate. I think if I was to take the lyrics of Victim of Pain, thrown in the ocean, a bottle, and 100 years from now, washes up, some kid gets it and reads the lyrics, they could probably feel exactly the way I felt like 40 years ago, 140 years from now. You know, it's that we speak about like genuine stuff, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's like why it's important, because Black Flag was in service to SST. You know, like they were waving the flag for SST and Minor Threat, Fugazi, like it's for Discord, it's for DC. Agnostic Front obviously carried New York on its back, but at the same time, it was for hardcore. And this was in service to hardcore. And this is like this thing that you don't own. It's not anyone's thing. And it's all over the world. And like, you do it because you're driven to do it.
It's our passion. It's something we love. And it got in, like I said, it got into me. And I've been living my life too, you know, like Vinny's been living his life to his fullest. I've lived a different life, but, you know, I've always said, you know, when, you know, I know there's people my age that have aged way worse. I'm going to be 60 years old in another month, you know, and I feel good about myself. I feel I've enjoyed life. I've traveled the world. I've seen things that people wait till they're 68 to retire, and then 2 years later, drop dead. As long as there's a demand, people want to see us. Oh, we'll always be here. But if I have to go to work when I'm 68, well, I'll go to work. I lived a hell of a life. I lived 68 great years. I mean, from 17 to 50 of it, at least, was like my retirement. And let me tell you something. I toured the world. I did everything. I've done mistakes. I mean, I've lived a hell of a life, but it all like was a learning experience. And that's my giant retirement. I'll go work over here across the street. Doesn't matter.
Well, and like, how many people don't even manage to affect their neighborhood, let alone affecting global neighborhoods of people, you know? Like, it's amazing. I think, like, obviously what you guys did through determination and drive, but just the power of punk that gave kids like permission to use their drive and use their power to kind of see how far they could take it. And obviously people took it to different places, but you guys, like it's kids in Japan, right? Like kids in Brazil.
Everywhere. Like, and what's really, you know, odd about that is we were always like the redheaded stepchilds of the scene. We were always like the ugly ducklings, like in every way, musically. I mean, there's nothing pretty about what we do, you know? Yeah. You know, and if you look at us, we're like, you know, a bunch of ugly tattooed guys, but you know, I'm just, you know, talking like we were never the pretty pop punk kids or the, you know, and we never had any of that stuff. And I'm not knocking those kids down too, because there's a lot of great bands that always get a lot of shit for, and they're still being themselves just because they got radio play and they got big. It wasn't their fault they got big. They're still doing what they love, you know? But I'm just saying we were the ugly ducklings of the scene and we kept doing it. You know, we brought ugly music to you and people liked it. You know, they needed some They needed to feel like they were rolled around in a dumpster, and that's what we brought to them.
Yeah, like I think about this a lot. Like obviously there's been a flattening that's happened, and geographically there's been sort of like every place is kind of more or less this getting to the same thing now. But at a different time, geography shaped so much of who you were, especially
Oh,
the bands.
absolutely. You could, like I was mentioned before, you could tell which where bands are from. If Agnostic Front, our sound comes from New York City. Like we probably would have never sounded the way we sounded like if we were a band in suburbia, California, or in Florida, or it's authentic to where you come from. That's probably why the grit and ugliness and rawness, same for you could kind of hear it with Negative Approach and stuff like that. It's probably the upbringings and the urban, ugly lifestyle of living on top of each other and burned out buildings, burned out cars, and chaos. And I think that also helped shape the sound of the band and who we were, as people. And it's oddly, and why we always talked about unity and all this stuff, because we knew how to live amongst each other. We were living in buildings, 12 families, more different religion, different races. That never mattered to us. We're used to living like this. We're used to living like this. My neighbor across the hall was, from China. My neighbor two houses up, it was, like African from Africa, whatever, or American. You're from the Bronx, and Hispanics everywhere. Like we knew how to live with people because that's what we, it was natural to us. And then when we started touring, we started seeing all the separation. I remember on our first tour, I even went to a bathroom in the middle of somewhere. It's in my diary. I kept a diary, by the way. And I'm doing a new book. It's coming out. It's called With Time. And I'm doing a exhibit at the Punk Rock Bowling. Are you going to be there? Going
Yeah, I'm gonna be down. Yeah.
to be there at Punk Rock Bowling?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, on May 24th at Noriati Theater, at between 5 and 7, we're doing an exhibit of some of the stuff in my book. I've kept diaries, I've
Oh,
kept everything,
fuck. I
and it's
got,
all
yeah.
like things from it, And I'm talking about it in my diary, like I can't believe it. There's a bathroom still. This is 1985, and it says blacks and whites. I'm like, what am I looking at over here? Somewhere, and we saw like a real Ku Klux Klan burning thing. We pulled over to the side of the road, we hid, and we were watching. And then we're like, we just get out of here. They may see us. And we kept, and then we, like things that you only see in movies or you read about. This is still stuff that we're like experienced on tour and seeing the different gangs and seeing the different things happening in different parts of states. And we never, we didn't, we it was hard for us to relate to that because we grew up a certain different way. But I got a new book coming out too. It's called With Time. It's more of a coffee book based on my personal collection of all the Agnostic Front and based on that tour diary of every city, what we wrote about it, the flyers, pictures, stuff like that, and a lot of cool stuff. And that's going to be it's going to be announced pretty soon as
Oh,
a
that's
special
awesome.
2-hour exhibit. Just come. It's free to go through. Just come.
I'll be there. I can't wait. 'Cause yeah, I
Plenty of
really
leaders,
oh.
together too.
Oh man, my wife and I are going down for the thing. So we're gonna be definitely there. We'll see you at that event. 'Cause I've been waiting for that book, to be honest. Like last time you talked about how you kept everything, and obviously you see your chest of treasures at the very beginning of the documentary that you bust open and like just all the
Yes,
stuff
one of the
that's in there.
chests. I
Oh.
still got that chest.
Oh man, that's a, like, because it's interesting how this is like extending this sort of metaphor of this being a religion for people, punk in a lot of ways. Those things become in a weird way like holy relics to a lot of people. Like you look at like the fever that kind of swept sort of 40 to 60-year-old men when Discord announced that box set of 7 inches coming out as they're all ordering it, and it's almost like if like some mega church put out some new collector's plate with Jesus on it, the way their congregation re react to it, because we've imbued this with the importance that people imbue religious things with.
And I'm an avid collector, so I've been collecting my whole life and records. I mean, I have a pretty incredible record collection. I don't know
Did
if
you ever
you've,
get a, did you
huh?
ever get a foie, did you ever get your foie LP?
My YIP?
FWA from Florida,
Oh,
foie.
the compilation?
No, that, that band from Florida, FWA.
Oh yeah, I got that.
You got that eventually. Oh, that's still on my want list.
I got it. I got it.
Damn.
Yeah, it's great. You know me, I'm a avid record collector. I've had hundreds of flyers, you know. And now I've streamed everything down because it's too much. I've been streaming down to just AS stuff because I want stuff to leave for my children, you know, so they know my legacy. That was the main reasoning behind writing my book is for my family, something they could have, they could always read. Because it was a struggle coming from Cuba all the way here and getting to where I'm at and going through what I've gone through. And I wanted that to be documented for them, you know. But as an avid collector, and I didn't know, I just loved all this stuff. All that stuff was so important to me. Flyers, look at the art on flyers. I never liked a punk record that came out without a sleeve. Like, what is this? Like, don't you want to, like, it complements, like, what you're saying complements image-wise. So punk was very image to me. Like, the Sex Pistols, look at that image. You look at the Ramones, the Dead Boys. I mean, New York Dolls. It's all image. And how do you not bring that in and then add your music to it? And it all works in hand. You know, I've always hate that bands that release records, no sleeves and stuff like that.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Well, it's funny you say that though, because I think it kind of also can work the other way for a band. Like, I always think if you guys and Timmy O'Hannon had been from the same city or in the same city at a certain point and met each other outside of all this sort of pre-existing baggage, preconceived notions, on his side mainly, obviously, but like, I kind of think ideologically, stripping again all the isms away and all that kind of stuff. You guys are coming at this from the same place. Like, we want to build community. You guys self-released your fucking 7-inch. Like, bands out there weren't doing that. They were requiring DIY labels, but labels.
Well, here's the thing, you know, it was very made known to me, especially when I went to San Francisco for the first time, or California first time, what that he was talking about. I didn't live there demographically. I lived over here, and he didn't know what we were talking about. And you see all these people and all these bands, AOD and all these bands, writing me saying, "Hey, I don't know what you're talking about. Agnostic Front's not like this. You know, they're like this, whatever." But he had the classic judge a book by its cover mentality. And it was very different. The coasts were very, very, very. I'd never seen the gang mentality, the split of all these different punk movements till I went to like LA. I was like, wow, look at these half punk gangs doing all this crazy stuff and they don't get along with each other. I never experienced any of that, you know? But it's just the classic judging a book by its cover, just what I said. And he never really made his way to New York to hang out or come to the New York and really experience it yourself. So you're going to sit there and critique and judge everything by what you're experiencing. And he was experiencing some shit, you know. And if we demographically lived over there, we wouldn't have sounded like we were. We probably would never put out records like we were, like we did, because we probably wouldn't have felt some of the urge or some of those feelings that we felt lyrically that we did, like from United Blood or Victim in Pain. You know, it's just different. But that was just. I always thought that was just complete rudeness. And when I did that classic interview for him, I was supposed to, it was supposed to be, it was a simple agreement. You send me the interview, I answer, it's over. He rebutted and he answered over my answer because he always has to have his last say. And what's funny about that was we met him on tour and we had this thing, well, if anybody catch him out there, we're just going to light him up, you know? And he finally came to one of our shows. I think when we played with Attitude, at the Moby Head Gardens in 1986, something like that, or 85, 86, 80. And this is the little old man. And we're like, we can't hit this guy. We're gonna kill him, you know? And we sat down, we talked, we had a great conversation, and he hung out the show, whatever, and we leave, and we thought everything's cool, and he starts talking shit about us again.
Yeah.
Oh, man, cool.
Well, it's And once again, I wasn't there, so I'm just looking at this from an outsider, but it seems like outside of like sort of like the imagery of stuff and sort of like just like the vibe sometimes, but I think like on an actual like ideological level, what you guys are doing in New York and ultimately doing throughout your whole career is very much like what he seemed to kind of dedicate his life to out there, which is like building community, a community that will sustain after you're gone. It's about what you're doing, but it's also about trying to create something that exists outside capitalism, that exists outside socialism, that exists outside of all this stuff, that just is like something that kids can go to for something and make something
But
out of.
he wanted it his way and only his way, and only his way rules, and you have to think only his way. That's where it's all wrong. No, and we always, you should be able to, you should be able to think, and of course there's some things that, when you know someone's not good, or it's a bad apple, you just stay away from it. You know what I mean? But it's always been great for me my whole life. I learned so much in life by just challenges. I've had different opinions through my whole life. There's a lot of things I would do different today than I did when I was young, But it was always been a learning experience. I was hardline thinking this way, and I met somebody and he explained something to me, and I thought, and I, you know, that's good to challenge yourself. But if you think everybody has to think the same way and behave the same way, which is what they were doing, and you're gonna get what you're gonna get. And then people started coming out to our shows. They made us more popular than anything. There were people that came out thinking that we were gonna show up, play on stage with like brown shirts or something like that, And they're like, "What is this guy talking about? This is a cool band. We're hanging out with them. We're at shows, we're playing. They're at my house." And then and it just starts kicking him in the ass, and he just can't get it because he was trying to get people to think a certain way and only be a certain way. All kinds, and it wasn't just our band being attacked. There was a lot of bands being attacked. The Bruisers. There's so many bands being attacked, and it just didn't stick, And that's it.
But like it obviously didn't stick, but at the same time, how do you think it did affect things with you guys? Like,
Well,
did
like I
it?
said, I think people were more interested. It's like, sometimes bad publicity is better than good publicity. It happened in the Sex Pistols, And as long as you keep mentioning the band and spell it correctly, hey, people are going to be interested to, to see or come out and experience and be at the show. And I'm not saying it was all great. There's been a lot of shows that we've had a lot of confrontation with people that we didn't want there or whatever, but we addressed it, and people know what side we take, who we are, And either way you put it, they've also put us in a line of danger many times too. They really did. There was a lot of times where we were playing shows in fear of our lives, and people were in fear of their lives, and it was not uncalled for. It was because it was bad attention being brought too. But as soon as we're up there talking about United Strong, Blacks and White, Punks and Skins, and people start fading away, they start really knowing what's happening. It was weird, man. It was a weird time, but it was also a different time, where things were different. Like I said, there's a lot of things I would do different today. And I understand today where, it's like, I don't know. It's like there's so much more information out there for you to really look up things, to really understand things, than there was when we were young. We didn't have the internet. We didn't have nothing. Even touring was a whole different challenge. We were calling people for shows. We don't know who the hell we were calling. We don't know who it was. We would just show up. Sometimes we show up and it was nothing there. It was fake. I remember we went to Chicago and it was an abandoned lot. We're like, "Oh, I guess we got played," And we went all the way to Chicago, But now with the internet, you could gather more information and make your own decisions, whatever. Like things would be different,
And it's also because I think it does affect, well, I don't know, like it's obviously you've experienced it, but like it's interesting thinking about how it did affect things. Like it precluded you guys from a certain booking circuit. Like you couldn't go to like the book your own fucking life, Maximum Rock and Roll circuit of people because you were tainted with that kind of brush at that point. And it, but at the same time, it's also something that you guys, like you're saying, Blacks and Whites, Punks and Skins, also
But
gay, like you guys were never like it never was something where I listen to your records, I'm like, this band hates gay people. Like
no,
gay people were always, I guess, a presence
said
in.
that I'm coming from New York City. Like, I mean, you don't think we ever seen gay people in our life? You know what I mean? Like, We're in a mecca of unfortunate, the whole HIV and all that stuff. We lost friends to that, and it's just ridiculous. But it's funny you mentioned that, because it was always like you would think we weren't allowed to play certain things, but we played all those clubs, and they never said. Like, I remember, like when we played in Berkeley, and we were playing with Neurosis and Dark Angel or Death Angel. Death Angel, I think they're from that area. And it was a great show, and in Neurosis, hey, we're playing what's that famous
The
place there,
Gilman.
Gilman. And we're like, yeah, and they never invite us, and we never wants to play. He goes, oh, come play. And we played. It was their show. Nobody knew. We have a guest, and we played a set, and it was people that, and everybody loved it. And it was a couple of people that realized it was us, and we were trying to stir up shit. Like, there was like girls were up in front of stage and took their shirt off, and were like trying to be like, they took the shirt because I had my shirt off. It's freaking hot. And so what? Take your shirt off. But they were instigating, trying to get us to instigate, Like, you could do whatever the hell you want, I don't care. Like, what I mean? Just, there's always that instigators, whatever I mean. But it was just ridiculous. We've played all those places, We've done many basement shows, we've done many parties, we've done, I remember this one time we were in Europe, and we're playing the squat, and the people that live in the squat were like, well, they had a meeting. They decided that they didn't want us to play. They were against us, so they left. They all left the squat, and we played. Like, that's the oddest thing in the world. Like, why don't you just grow balls and cancel the show, or get rid of us? They just decided, because you know what? It was a huge show. They wanted their money out of it, or whatever it was, and we just sat there. They fed us, whatever, but they were all against us. And I was like, okay, cool. It was a great show. It was in Italy or something. All right. Good luck. Have fun. There are all these hundreds of people here to see us. You're missing a great show. It's just oddball stuff, but it doesn't matter. Look, at the end of the day, like I said, look, I've done stupid things in my past. I've even wrote about it in my book. I've done things that I didn't know I was hurting people till I actually encountered people, like that lady that had the numbers from a concentration camp and stuff like that. I had a destroy pin. I was a punk rock kid. I didn't know. I thought it was Sex Pistols, punk rock, and all that stuff played. I mentioned it for a reason. It was mind changing. It was like, oh, I was doing this, or I didn't really understand. I was a dumb youth thinking certain way, and I just wanted chaos and crazy. I could tell I was a punk rocker when politically incorrect was correct. It's different now, but it was my life, and I'm grateful for being there. I'm grateful to be at that time of life when, I think that was the best time of punk and all, period. The birth, I was grateful to be there, and I understand the changes and stuff too, but it was all a life experience for me, and I learned. I took what I learned from it, and then it brought me to some places I never wanted to be, but it was all a learning experience. If it wasn't for all that stuff to happen, I wouldn't be here today talking to you. And I just channeled it all in a positive way, which is another different thing that Agnostic Front did. Like, we come from the scene where it was all like, the classic New York punk scene, drug, sex, drugs, rock and roll, and fuck this, fuck that, like we agree with all that, but hey, how about let's do something different? Let's make a little change. How about something positive? We're the new youth now in this movement. And how about we unite? How about we bring people together? No, fuck you, man. We do drugs, and so we just kind of figured it all out, and we just did our thing,
Well, like, if this is an organic thing, there has to be room for growth. Like, what's the alternative? You double down on it and you're like, no, I never learned from anything. Fuck you. Everything
It's
I
a lot
said.
easier. Just a lot easier to point fingers and or walk, not be accountable for what you're doing. It's a lot easier to just typical narcissist mentality, whatever, or superior mentality. You know what I mean?
Do you think the maximum rock and roll, not maximum rock and roll, but like the sort of like backlash that ensued drove you guys to be like more contrarian in some of the stuff, or it drove you maybe
No,
not more
we
contrarian, but more towards certain imagery, or more towards certain embracing certain things on Cause for Alarm, or going towards Cause for Alarm, metal even?
No, no, no. We just always did us. We didn't. We It was funny because that, even at the time I was with a woman that was in the biggest peace punk band in
Yes.
New York. We had a kid together, and it was just confusing to so many people. And I loved it,
Well, I think New York's confusing to a lot of people, and I think that's the
Well,
thing that.
we knew how to live with people. I'm going back to we know how to live with people, As long as you, New Yorkers are very interesting people. New Yorkers, they don't, you see them crossing over a dead body. They mind their own damn business. As long as that dead body's not reaching for you, trying to grab you, you know what I mean? So
Or a
we
friend
know
or a
how to live
family.
amongst people. We know when a threat is a threat, when it's an imminent threat, when something you need to defend yourself or go for it. You know what I mean? So sometimes people talk, or they're confused, or they're just saying stuff, or you're hearing different things. But that was good to challenge yourself mentally, like, oh, but okay, I understand you like that, but what about this? And everybody kind of liked each other in their own different ways. Everybody kind of got along. Atlanta had that same type of scenes. A lot of the Eastern had that scene where I think on the West Coast is very hard line separated, a lot of stuff, and very confrontational, and in an ugly way where in a confrontational, in a threat way, But that was the past, man. And we actually did a really great interview for Maximum Rock and Roll, and my friend at the time also was in my Rumba's Car Club. He was always worked for Maximum Rock and Roll. He always wanted to clear that stuff, but we did a fantastic interview.
Was it
And
Bruce
he,
Roars?
yes, and
Rest
he,
in peace. Yeah.
rest in peace, exactly. And he was Maximum Rock and Roll is going to let me do this interview. I want to do it, and then we just. It was good. It was good. Look, bygones be bygones. It was a time and a place. It was hard, but we pushed through, and we were just being us. You put us in situations, and we just, hey, we're doing what we're doing. We love what we're doing. So if you're trying to stop us, go for it. We're going to keep going because we.
When we played, when we didn't even play Maximum Rock, we got invited to Maximum Rock and Roll to do a DJ set one time, and we're going through the library, and we found an AF record, and we're like, "That's fucking awesome!" So we played an AF record, and he came running, and I guess something else maybe, and Bruce came running in, and he's like, "Oh my God, Tim would be spinning in his grave! This is amazing!" And like, I really feel like,
But he had all those records. You notice
oh yeah.
he had a hell of a great record collection. I heard he had a lot of Shifty records too, because
Oh,
everybody sent
crazy.
everything. Everybody sent everything for review. It was like the Bible, And it was kind of, like I said, it was very one way-ish, which was kind of a shame because, I mean, every band always wanted to send their records there for reviews and. And everybody wanted to be a part of it, but then you start isolating people and you're like, oh, fuck it,
Well, that's it's like. You say that, and it's Walter Schreifels when he was last on the show. We brought up Max Rock and Roll, and it's always brought up in a glowing kind of way on this show, because Book Your Own Fucking Life was such an important book for bands and all this sort of stuff and all the work they did. But it is a double-edged sword, particularly for New York bands. Yourselves and Youth of Today got the worst of it, it seems, where because of the reach of this thing. And because there's not a lot of alternative media at that point, like this thing goes around the world and becomes
the Bible,
the Bible. Yeah.
punk Bible. This is what everybody was always looking forward to, the next issue and the next release, and see what's going on, in New York, what's going on in Italy, what's going on in Finland, what's going on in Southern California, Northern California, and it was and at one point it was just like, everybody else had other zines, and it really just became that, what I just told you. It's just a one thought process, and it's wasn't really fair.
Yeah. Well, going back to certainly more well, I don't know, actually, I guess not more positive things necessarily, but interesting things for me. Like, was there other people you considered writing with on Cause for Alarm?
No, well, Steve,
Pete?
Pete wrote with them. I had kind of left the band for a moment, but honestly, between me and you, I didn't really dig the music change a lot. It was more hardcore guy, And it actually grew on me after I recorded it. 'Cause even when I did my vocals, I was sick and I went back and I'm doing vocals that are not even mine, you know. But everything kind of grew on me afterwards, you know. And I enjoyed them playing them live. I wish I really got to play them live before. And we did, you know, like I have tapes. There's a good three of those songs that we played live, and they were different lyrics. You know, and just we were playing those songs in 1985 on a tour. I have a set list of some of those songs on it, you know, and it was just, you know, it just never matured for me. I never got that moment of the newer stuff, especially when Alex came in and that stuff, to mature to me, because I never got to really experience the rehearsals or nothing like that to really dive into the way I wanted to dive into it. I wish I would have been able to re-record that record when now my feeling stuff. And of course, there's some questionable, not, you know, just they're not even questionable. It's just different things of it was basically, if you live in New York, you understood what it was. You know what I mean? What it was talking about, whatever. But it was just. It was a little strange for me because I came back into the situation. But people love that record.
Yeah, like it now it's changed, like the world's kind of all your, because it was always, it felt like as time went on, people, like obviously people loved these records, and there's Agnostic Front. When you got into Agnostic Front, that record you got into that you guys had out at the time is holds a special place to you, obviously. But it feels like time has gone on, the canon of great Agnostic Front records has increased as all these other records have kind of been brought into the fold as people have kind of been influenced by them.
Yeah, and you know, every record is different. It sounds different to me. Like, I have a hard time sometimes listening to the records because even I sound different on all the records. But like I said, we're not a studio band. We're not. And then you put on that live record of CBGB's, you hear all those songs from prior to 1989, and they all sound like, you know, it's like, wow, these songs are they all joined together in a certain way. And it's just, we're more of a live band. I've always told people, you want to really know what we're about, come to our live shows. Then you really understand the band more than anything. We're not a studio band. I mean, through the years, we've gotten better at being a studio, but it's different when you're actually performing the songs, when you put your whole self into it. It's more convincing somehow. You know what I mean? Like you could feel the passion of the songs, of the moment, of everything. Now, you don't hear that. You don't really feel that in records, not from Agnostic Front. There's other bands that do that. You could feel that passion, that energy, whatever. We were never that band, really, kind of. We're more that live band. And there's a couple, I mean, look, Victim and Pain is a record. It's a monster. And I've always said it, you know, everybody's like, what's your favorite records? And I'm like, I'd be arrogant if I have to mention my own band, but you know what? It's up there with the top five. I don't really care what anybody says. I listen to it and I get blown away. I put it on to this day. I still put it on. I'm like, holy shit, I did that, you know, like, and it was a magical time and place. And it's a great record, and lyrically, like where I was. And now and we're gonna have them at the Punk Rock Bowling Show. We're having the 40-year anniversary version of Victim of Pain. It's, you know, remastered by Don Fierce, and now it sounds like right, you're right in the studio with us from the actual reels, because since 1986 and on, it's been a different master, and a masters of masters of master masters. This is direct from the reel now, so you get to hear it in a different way. It's a different animal, you know, and it's 45 instead of 33 RPM, so it jumps at you. It's a great sound. I heard it the other day. I was like, wow, this thing is fierce. It's biting people, you know. And I'm proud of it, you know. I didn't know what we were doing. We were just four dudes in our studio just doing what we're doing, and we did something special for New York, you know. Like it's still known as, you know, a huge influential album. You know, put New York hardcore on the map. I mean, there was other bands. Don't get me wrong. Reagan Youth. I love Reagan Youth. What a great album. Came out at the same time. The Kraut, you know. But for some reason, Victim in Pain did something different. Did something really different that those great bands, I love Kraut, love Reagan Youth, you know. And Victim in Pain just was a different caliber, came out of a different gun, whatever it was, that more people kind of boom, rabbit.
Well, you kind of said it there. Like, there's a lot of those New York bands, by the time those LPs came out, for whatever reason, like, don't really capture I guess, the power of these bands when you watch the live videos, or I guess to experience them live in some cases, or their demos that came out before. But Victim in Pain's the one that just like, yeah, like it sounds perfect. And I obviously it could have been way more powerful live, as you know, but like not experiencing it. And I'm watching the videos, it's fucking amazing live. But like that record is just, but like even you as a front man, like to me, you're like one of the greatest front people of all time. But you have different eras in these different periods of the band, and like watching you adapt to the changing music and still being a hardcore front person, like not trying to be a metal front person, not trying to be a, like a, I don't know, like a, like, but just always being a hardcore front person in these bands. It's awesome. But I want to ask.
I was just being myself, you know. And until to this day, it's really weird that there's people that don't know me in that scene, you know. And I've like from what all the other stuff I do, like Jiu-Jitsu World or my family, friends, and they come to my show, and I got on stage and I play, and I get off stage, they're like, "What happened? What did I just witness?" They're like, "That was incredible." Whatever, like what, and then I'm so quiet, so humble off stage, you know. I'm like so polite, whatever. I'm the same way. It's just that this is this intense intensity of like punk got into me. It's in me, you know. It's like that virus is fucking going crazy, and it's just me doing my thing I love to do, you know. It's not like I put on a performance, you know. It's just, this is me, and this is me with my people, my element, you know, my the stuff I love. This is me, my retirement plan, you know. And over here, I'm the dad over here, whatever. And I'm still the same person, you know. But they're in shock, you know.
I think there's like I think it's like a One Voice Era live video of you guys playing. You got the sick braided like hair. You're doing like the awesome like stage mosh kind of dance thing on stage, and there's like 90 dudes. I'm trying to remember where it's fucking from. It's like a huge club, and there's like a riot that breaks out. And you it's like you guys on the stage and
Oh,
the
it
kids
must
of
have been
this,
Urban Plaza.
and then the bouncers, like there's like
Right.
any
Yeah. We had a fight with the riot. A riot and with bouncers. Not Urban Plaza, the Palladium.
Played, okay, that's it. And there's a frustration in your voice as you're talking at that point, and in your face. Did it become like a lot at a certain point, showing up in different places, having to deal with kind of like this level of aggression? Not the positive aggression we're talking about, but like just like.
There were many shows that we pulled up to, and I would say, "Hey, we're here to play for you, not against you. If you continue yourself, we're gonna stop playing." And literally, three or four songs, we stopped playing. We're like, "I didn't come here to play for certain things to happen. I didn't come here to play for the bouncers to beat up the people here. It's done." And you know, people know my frustration, know what's going on, so they're all frustrated. So they got tired of the bouncers being the bouncers, and they bring it on. You know what's gonna happen now. Huge ass riot, you know, and you brought it upon yourselves. I'm not catering to, I'm not going to play doors. You're going to behave in this same manner. Now you're going to have to deal with the consequences. So there's many times that's happened, you know. I'm telling you, man, we just want to play, and especially even as you get older, you just want to have fun, and you know, just have a good time and play and do the things we love, enjoy the show afterwards, and meet people. I mean, we're just very grateful of God, of have had this life, you know, and it wasn't easy. You know, we've seen a lot of bands come and just go and become gigantic bands, and we're always that same middle level band, but we have a really good giant underground core that it's like the greatest friendship in the world. You know, like again, I don't like using the words fans, but that core, it's the structure to any high riser. We have a hell of a structure. You could build the biggest building in the world, and it's standing on New York hardcore, our structure, what we created. And that means a lot more, because all that stuff could come down, but that structure is still going to be there, that base, you know. And we've always had that mentality. Like I tell you, we're going to meet the same people on the way up, or we went down. And it's been a giant roller coaster ride. And we've seen these people on the way up and on the way down. They remember. We remember, they remember, we remember, they remember, and it's fun.
Well, there's always that quest for family that I think draws a lot of people to punk and hardcore, like to build your own family, create your own family.
Yeah, something you belong to that you want, that you enjoy, that feels genuine.
Yeah, and I think like, and obviously there's the gang, the family in LA prior to Agnostic Front, but it's really around Agnostic Front that you start, and New York hardcore, I guess it's also becomes part of it, where like this sort of idea of using family to describe this sort of thing, and using these are my brothers, these are my sisters, these are my people, like.
It's true, everything he's saying, and I think I've explained it. I mean, this is the way our upbringing was. Like in these buildings, you have to understand, in these
Yeah.
12 family buildings, doors were always open, even though I was as a kid. You know, like you went across, you play with this neighbor, you went two flights high up, you play with this neighbor. We were always playing outside, playing, you know, bottle, you know, whatever games on a street. It was, you go, you knew everybody in the building. You knew everybody in the building next to you. You knew every natural thing. It was like, it wasn't like when I first moved to Phoenix, I thought it was weird. I, you know, because I've never seen like homes with block fences between every home. I always see block fences in industrial areas, you know, because you don't want people to come in and break. But every house here has a block fence. Like, you know, like you go back to New Jersey and like that, there's no fences. They're all people, all the kids come out and play. Or if there's a fence, it's a chain link fence because you have a dog, but there's still that back door. You go out and play football in the middle of the whole thing, and there's like 30 families, you know? And we just, it's an East Coast thing, especially a New York thing where, you know, the whole block, everybody knew each other. You know, there was challenges, you know, you always had to, you know, make sure, you know, everybody looked out for each other and stuff like that, but it was always very family orientated, very. And that's what's ruined New York. As soon as they started gentrifying, they got rid of all the families, and they had to go somewhere. They pushed them out into more different suburbs. It became nothing. It became bland. Like people don't even know each other. There's people in, like I go to Vinny's house, I'm like, who's your neighbor? He goes, I don't know who they are. I used to go to Vinny's house. You open the door, his aunt was upstairs, his mom was downstairs, his cousin Babs was all in this. It was just like, whoa, every door is open. Like I tell you, you walk into every door, someone's cooking. Hey, Rod, sit down, I got popcorn, you know. That's all gone. That's all gone. That's the New York we grew up with. You understand? That's why we have all these values and these roots that, you know, it's just not like we're trying to do something. It's like, it was always there. It was always there for us. Always there for us.
Well, and you know, not to dwell on the more negative stuff, but like that thing you talked about going out to LA, seeing that sort of the gang structure that existed in hardcore. Obviously, that's coming from people that grew up around gangs. Like that's part of the community that's kind of coming into the scene,
Exactly.
bringing that stuff in. But then it becomes like, you know, and Rollins talks about this in America's Hardcore. So he says, yeah, we brought that back to DC, and then it gets brought to Boston. But it's a plaything for them, right? Like it's kids that it's not part of their world and they don't necessarily need it, but it gets to New York and I think it really made sense for all these kids. Like, and obviously the violence thing becomes something like a disease, but it just feels like the crew structure, like all that stuff, these kids that were homeless, these kids that like you guys were like living in squats, like this made sense for these kids. It wasn't a plaything. This was like something that just took hold.
Yeah. You know, yeah, you're right about that. There's a lot of, like I said, geographically, it was so different. And I experienced that on my first tour and like how the scenes were, how everything was, how people were living, you know, then how we were living. And I think a lot of the stuff that you're seeing lyrically with Agnostic Front, what I speak about, was just normal, organic stuff that happened. That was part of our lives. It wasn't forced. We weren't trying to be a family or trying to be a tribe, or it was just, we were living it, you know? And it was just, that was our way of life. And that's all we knew. Like, what do you mean? You know, I'm gonna go upstairs, hang out, play with this guy, or whatever, or go down a road, go down a block, you know? It was normal. Like, and then when I see the way other people are doing stuff, it's normal for them and it worked for them. And I could see where the differences was. And I was really always grateful to go back to New York and be amongst that craziness that kind of energizes me, you know?
Well, it's always like 82, 83 is kind of like, oh, that's when hardcore ends. Like, you know, people in LA talk about the violence getting too much, but that's when I think you guys carry the torch. And that's when it becomes like, this is going to be what this thing is.
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing. Everybody's always talking about what some ends and like, how could you say that? How could you say? Like I remember reading that book, the same book you're talking about,
America's
America
Hardcore.
or something like that, America.
Yeah.
and saying Punk died this. I mean, how do you say that? And what was really crazy about it, by the way, Mike, just so you know, my computer's gonna die probably in about maybe like 5 minutes. So if you have anything important, but I don't have my charger. I'm not even home. But what I'm trying to say is that here we are playing a sold out show at CBGB's, packed. And right next door to CBGB's gallery, there's a whole thing on American hardcore and all these photos and all this stuff. And I'm talking about how Punk died in 1986 or 85, whatever. Excuse me. What are you talking about? This place is packed. Oh, you mean you gave up? You mean you gave up? You mean you died? It died in your heart because you just didn't want to see anything different in what only your belief and your thoughts. You didn't want to accept the new people or accept what was happening. Some of it was wrong. You know, some of it, well, you just redirect. You don't have to get off that lane or that exit. Go to the next exit. Find people you can relate with. Still, people love that. So you mean you gave up? You know, because as far as I know, this place is packed and I'm still touring the world. So what the hell are you talking about? I've just accepted the fact that, you know, it is what it is. And it's still there. It's still growing. There's always going to be some new band, some band influenced by this band, somebody doing something because they feel that you know, they're screaming for a change. They feel oppressed. They want to talk about something. And it's just either you live in your own bubble or you just move with it. And we've always moved with it because that's a lot of the gratefulness and gratitude we have is that we were able to tour and meet different people, meet different bands, just and just gel with so much that it kind of kept us alive and youthful and not bitter and that just stayed in certain areas and never did nothing.
We talk about jiving and or mixing with different people. Did you ever meet or were you ever around, because they were in New York around the same time, or like not the same time obviously, but towards the late 80s, the Murder Junkies and Gigi Allen and that whole
Oh
scene?
God, yes, of course. I've known them before the Murder Junkies, you know, the Jabbers. I'm a huge Jabbers fan. I love the Jabbers. I've seen the Jabbers. I've seen all the early Gigi Allen before the whole Murder Junkies stuff. And even I remember being at a couple shows that come right to my mind. The Cat Club show, you know, and you know, Gigi Allen's, hey, come to see my show, you know, because we knew each other on that level from the old play, you know, the shows. And I went and I remember he was normal, talking, whatever. And he came back. He's like, hey, Roger, maybe it's going to get a little crazy. I'm like, I know, I've seen you before. So he goes, I had, you know, I took a lot of laxatives and I had a lot to. I remember them, the pool, the club trying to get rid of him with the pool sticks, trying to push him away as he's trying to throw shit at everybody. I mean, it's a mess. Personally, I prefer the Jabbers in that era. Then the more of the shock era, you know what I mean? I was really not into the shock era, but you know, Gigi Allen and later on a year, I wasn't really big on that stuff, but I still enjoyed some shows. But when it got too crazy, I was like, I've seen a couple of really crazy shows. I don't want to talk about it, but I've seen a lot really bad, crazy shows. But those early '87 shows of just the Jabbers or just him, you know, what was that other band before the Murder Junkies?
Malpractice Band,
No, right before that.
Texas Nazis, or that's after the
No.
Murder Junkies,
Yeah.
AIDS Brigade, or that's
I can't remember, but
there's a lot of terrible names we're gonna have to run through.
and it you know, he started going into that shock thing. It just, you know, I was into a different thing, but it wasn't my thing. But you know, I went to the shows, he invited me, I saw him on the street, whatever, and I still went. But the Jabbers are an incredible band. I think that first Jabbers album is one of the greatest punk records ever, American punk records. People don't give it a shot or a chance because they, you know, they think, you know, they hear Gigi Allen, they know, you know, his prison sentence and all that crazy stuff. And I mean, it doesn't have the greatest rap, you know. But if you get a chance to listen to that first album, what's it called again?
Suck on This, is that the first one? Or
No, that's what the all the shock stuff.
I thought that was still Jabbers era, like the one with like the hand-drawn penis on the cover or whatever, like the blowjob thing. I'm thinking maybe I'm misremembering the name.
I'm talking with the first two Jabbers 7-inch.
Beat, 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 and
Yeah. What's
yeah.
the first album? I can't remember. It's on the tip of my tongue. Anyway, I remember when the Sting dies.
Yeah, well, I was just like the, because it's rarely you have a songwriter who becomes worse as they go on. Like G.G. Allin became a worse songwriter than well, not to go out on G.G. Allin, but I don't want your computer to die without me saying thanks for coming on, Roger. And anytime you want to come back, Vinny or not, you're always welcome.
Well, thank you. I had a good time. We talk about always pretty cool stuff. It's a lot, man. We could talk forever, you know that. But always was, is, and always shall be is one of the greatest punk records. Just remember that. People may disagree with me, but you listen to that 7-inch, I mean that LP, and it's basically the 2 7-inches and maybe one or two more songs. It's phenomenal.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.